this is Danielle from The Jazz Curator, and this is episode 85 of Art for Your Ear. 85. This episode, as always, is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. I feel like you guys could say that right along with me now. And well, you should. Pop over to SaatchiArt.com because there's so much good stuff over there. Okay, so today I am so excited to ask this artist about her work. Kentucky-born, Brooklyn-based artist Natalie Baxter makes soft sculpture. Yep, tasseled guns and golden stuffed American flags. They are smart and beautiful and oh, so timely. So, speaking of timely, let's get on with it. Calling Natalie in New York. Hi, Natalie.
Hey, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
I am so excited about this. I've been thinking about it all day.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad that you wanted to do this.
Yeah. Well, oh my gosh, there's a lot of things I need to ask you. And I started poking around on your site to quote unquote research, but then I didn't want to be surprised. I wanted to be surprised. So I thought, no, I'm going to stop and then just ask you instead.
Cool.
So I don't even know how I found you. And it wasn't that long ago. I wrote about your amazing gun series.
Yeah.
I have no idea where I saw your work, but the second I did, I was just like, loved it instantly.
Yeah, I guess you posted something on Instagram and all of a sudden my phone blew up and I was like, what is happening? So you have a big following.
Well, see, I know what my people like. I knew that they would love crazy tasseled guns. So, you know, but I want to ask you all about how you got to doing what you're doing now, because I think what you're doing now is so beautiful and smart and very timely. So I want to get to all of that, but I want to know, I always start by asking what people were like as kids. You know, were you always sewing and quilting and things like that as a kid, or did this come later?
So sewing stuff came later, like when I was a teenager, or maybe even early 20s. But as a kid, yeah, I was always in all the art classes that I could be in. Mm-hmm. And my parents were really good at putting me in kind of like art camps or after school programs. And I remember once in sixth grade, I remembered this story recently, actually, because my school like interviewed me about the work that I was doing.
Yeah.
So I was like thinking about my schooling. And I remember in sixth grade, this social studies teacher, she like brought my mom in. I was like having a meeting with me, my mom, my social studies teacher in sixth grade. And I was like, oh no, I'm probably in trouble. Like I've probably done something wrong. Because I definitely wasn't an A student. So I was like, oh, what did I do?
It can only be bad.
Yeah, it can only be bad. But she was so awesome. She was like, I really think that Natalie should just draw her notes instead of like write them, like instead of taking regular notes, she should draw what we're learning about, because I think that that's how she learns. And I think that was a really good teacher to recognize that.
That's an amazing teacher. That is so fab. And you must have felt great.
Yeah, I was like, this is awesome.
Because it probably is how you learned.
Yeah, exactly. And I took that through college. I remember I took a geology class because you had to take, you know, you have to take some kind of science class. So I was taking geology and I like totally had all these markers and drew all the different rock layers. And I think it does help you, or it helps me.
Yeah, it would help me too, because I'm a visual person, right? And so I can learn so much better if I can see the stuff instead of just reading.
Yeah, and then what else? Then I always took art classes like in high school. We could take independent studies. So we could kind of come up with a concept or an idea for a class and then just spend the whole semester doing that project. So mine were always art related projects.
Wow, you went to really good schools.
Yeah. Yeah, they were good.
Yeah. And so was your family artistic, or did they just sort of nurture this in you?
So my grandmothers on both sides actually were very artistic. And my grandmother on my mom's side, she's more of a craft lady. So she's the one who taught me to sew and quilt later on. But she's one of those people who she's always working on something, you know, like
yeah.
gardening or cooking or sewing. And she grew up in a rural part of Kentucky where she was like the go-to person to sew up a dress or a quilt. So she had all of these quilt scraps in her attic.
Wow.
And that's what got me into sewing.
Is that what you use? Are you still using any of those?
Some of them I use. Like, my parents just gave me a bunch that were in my grandmother's house. Some of them I use, but some I just get fabric I get from the garment district in New York.
Yeah.
Or from online. There's a lot of fabric places online that I order from.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever go and like looking for like old vintagey ones?
Yeah. Sometimes I find stuff on eBay, old quilt tops.
Oh. Yeah. I wondered where you found them because they're crazy in pattern and some are tropical and like they're just all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes, so quilting, I don't know if you know about, or like the process of quilting.
But I know nothing.
Okay. It's kind of like, think of it like a sandwich. So there's the quilt top, mm-hmm. which is all the pieced together different fabrics that create the pattern.
Yeah.
So that's step one, which takes a lot of time, but it's not even the most time consuming part of quilting. And then there's a second layer that's the batting. So like a cotton stuffing that keeps you warm.
Yeah.
And then the third layer is just like almost like a sheet. A flat color. And then the act of quilting is sewing through the three layers.
Oh. So I always thought quilting was the top part.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's all quilting.
It's all of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But so a lot of people will start a quilt, like make a quilt top, and then not finish it. So then.
See, that's why I thought that. That's about as far as I would get. Like maybe a quarter of one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it sits in someone's attic and they put it up on eBay. They're like, I don't know what to do with this. So. Sometimes I snatch up some quilt tops on eBay.
Oh, that's so cool. Do you find it hard, like with your grandmother's scraps, do you find it hard to use them? Like, would you rather just keep them as treasures or?
I guess I never really thought about that. No, because I feel like she would want me to make something out of them.
Yeah.
She is a very crafty lady.
Yeah. Oh, and so what does she think of all your work now?
She has dementia. So every time I see her, I like tell her about it again.
Yeah.
So I show her pictures or like bring something that I'm working on. And she's always like, you've done pass me up. Like look at all you've done. And I'm like, but yeah, she was over, I went home at Christmas time and she did all of these like crocheted, snowflakes that's on my parents' Christmas tree. There's like hundreds of them. And she was like, who made those? And we're like, you did, Granny. And she was like, I did? Well, I made a lot. And I'm like, yep.
Is she still making now?
No, I think she's 90, 93, 94.
Yeah.
So I don't think she can handle it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
She wishes she was.
Yeah. Well, how cool that you got to keep that going in the family.
Yeah.
In your own special, very contemporary way.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so cool. What about your other grandmother? What kind of art does she make?
So I never met her. She died before I was born, but we have a lot of paintings of hers in our basement that I discovered later on. And maybe from my grandfather, too, on my dad's side. But they were, I think they did it as kind of a hobby.
That's
and
so
my
cool.
parents, not really so much artistic, but very supportive.
Yeah, that is so important and so great. I guess the making part skipped a generation and landed square on you. And
yeah,
it's so nice that they support it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And so the one part of research I did do, and then I stopped reading. But you did an MFA, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
You did your undergrad and then an MFA. So were you working in fabric that whole time or did you start in painting and change or how did that go?
No. So when I was in high school, I did a lot of painting and drawing and kind of sculptural stuff. And then in college, I went to this small liberal arts school in Tennessee. It's called Swanee.
Mm-hmm.
And I was an art major there and I kind of discovered video art. I was like, oh, wow, this is so cool. I didn't know that this could be, that you could use video in this way to create these kind of abstract art pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So that was all new to me and I was really fascinated by it. So I learned video editing. I got into photography. And then after college, I moved to Montana for a little bit and then decided, okay, I think I do want to go to graduate school. So I decided to go back to Kentucky, the University of Kentucky, for graduate school. And I was still very much interested in video and film. And, well, like video that then turned into this sort of documentary portrait work.
Mm-hmm.
So after my first year of grad school, I think a lot of my professors kind of didn't know what to do with what I was doing. And I maybe didn't really know what I was doing either, but I was working, I was working in a lot of video and was doing a lot of work. I ended up doing a lot of work in Eastern Kentucky, which is a very mountainous part of the state. It's where my grandmother is from.
Mm-hmm.
So it was sort of a, like a look at family heritage through the eyes of women in the area, all different ages. So like, interviewed a 5-year-old up through my grandmother, who at the time was 85.
Wow.
Yeah. So they became these little portrait vignettes pieces. So then I moved to New York and I was like, oh, I'm really interested in going into filmmaking and documentary. So I did that for a couple of years. And then I think I just started craving using my hands. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you're working on film, I was doing a lot of editing. So it's like staring at a computer screen and it's a collaborative process, which is fun. But it's also a really lengthy, time-consuming process.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to finish. I just wanted to make something and finish it.
I'm exactly the same way. It's like, I need to get to that finish line.
Yeah. So I got into, or I pulled out this quilt, actually, that my grandmother had started. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll finish this quilt. So I started getting back into quilting. And it was around that time. So this was like 2 years ago. I went home to Kentucky for Christmas, and this was around the time that there a lot of shootings had taken place. There was, it's like Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, and there was a cop had just been murdered in New York City, and like Black Lives Matter stuff was heating up, and just like gun violence was very present in the media.
Mm-hmm.
And I was home in Kentucky and at a friend's house with this wall of just little handguns. And I had been in New York for a couple of years at that point. And I was like, whoa, this feels weird. Like,
yeah. Would you have been used to that as a kid in Kentucky?
I mean, I guess more so than in New York.
Right.
My family didn't have guns in the house or anything. My grandmother did. And definitely extended family, but yeah, I just felt really weird in that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, had just finished this quilt, so I was like, oh, I wonder what a wall of like quilted stuffed guns would look like. So I started making them, and kind of got like a little obsessive about making them.
It's like those crocheted snowflakes.
Yeah, exactly.
Who made all of these? Me.
Yeah. I know. I kind of reached a point. So this was also
when you
first
made the first one, were you just like, I am a freaking genius?
I was like, I was with my sister, I think. We were driving back.
Did you make it in Kentucky?
I made it in Kentucky. Yeah, I made it in Kentucky with like some of the fabric that I think I went straight to the fabric store, actually. Yeah. And I remember I was with my sister because I went to stay with her in Tennessee afterwards. So I was driving back with her and she was like, stop sewing. Why are you sewing so much? Like, talk to me. Look, you know, she got kind of annoyed, but I was like, I just have to do this. I have to figure out what's happening, or like, I don't know. I have to play this out. But it was also the first project that where I didn't talk about it with a lot of people while I was doing it.
Maybe because it wasn't collaborative for once.
Yeah, maybe that. But also I think it was at the time too, I was hanging out with a friend who was finishing a film, and he was very much like, don't tell anybody what you're doing until it's done. And that, I think that's kind of a filmmaker. People steal your ideas, people, you know,
right.
You don't want to talk about it. So I kind of took that advice, and there there was a point where it had almost been a year since I'd worked on this project. I'd made like over 100 guns, and I was living with four boys in a this basement apartment in Bushwick, and I was like, oh my God, what did I do?
You're just surrounded. I love that photo on your website of you just like surrounded by them.
That was my room. So they were like in every wall of the house. And I was kind of like, whoa, did I just make all of this stuff that I'm going to now have to like cart around and not know what to do with?
What did the boys think? Did they think you'd gone a little crazy down in the basement?
They were all a little crazy themselves. They were into it.
Were they artists too?
Yeah, artists and writers and artists and writers, I guess.
And so what did you do with them? Did you finally start to share them with the world, like online, or did you cart them around?
I had a show. The first time I showed them was at a friend's barn in Connecticut. So they have this really great barn space that they were like, it'd be really cool if you had a show here. So I had a gun show in a barn.
Oh my gosh.
And it was really fun. And then from there,
how many did you show in that one? Like everything you had?
I think there was about 60.
Wow. That would have been amazing.
Yeah, it was fun. And it was special because it was like outside of the city, so people came and it was summertime and it was just fun.
Yeah.
And so then people became interested in wanting to write about them. So then like press started happening, and I think that's when I was like, okay, this is good. I'm not gonna have like 150 guns in my life all the time.
Oh, and that whole, and then were you still like, so did you sort of stop making them for a bit while you figured that out, or were you still going?
I was still going.
Yeah.
It was definitely like tapping into a zone or of some sort of production.
You can when you go on your site and just scroll through them and all the different types of guns and tassels and sparkly material and all this stuff. It's like, I can feel your obsession, and it makes me want to do it too. You know, it's that's why I was so excited to talk to you, because you obviously are into it. You know, you obviously have tapped into something really cool.
Thank you.
And so when... I love the flags. I actually wrote a post about all your flags that I was going to put up. And then I was like, well, if I put this up, then I will have already shown them and I want to have her on the podcast. So I'm just going to hold on to them, have you on the podcast so that I can put them in that post. So when did the flags start?
So I started the flags this summer when I was at a residency in Wasaic, New York.
Oh, yeah. I just had somebody else on who I think was at that same residency. Yeah, I'll have to look and see who that was. How was it?
It was great. Yeah. I loved it. It's pretty magical up there.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. But so I was thinking about flags. After the Charleston shooting, there was a big debate in South Carolina about or maybe it was nationwide, about the Confederate flag.
Yeah.
And that I was like, why are people so tied to this symbol that means something so different than what it originally was made for? Or like, people take on their own meaning to this flag and this symbol. And so I started just thinking about flags in general. And then when I was up at Wasaic this past summer, it was in the midst of the Democratic National Convention and the Republican National Convention. So I listen to the radio, to like NPR, while I work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking about what was happening with our country at that time. So this is, you know, before we discovered that Trump would be our president. And but I sensed this like really this division already. Like it felt so weird. I mean, it still feels weird, I guess. But just this, I was interested in this division and how both sides kind of alienate the others, or like divide. This how our country was like pretty divided,
yeah.
And what it means to different people. So I started making some versions of the American flag. So just like lots of different fabrics, different styles, different materials, and I started making a lot of gold flags. It's because I was like using a lot of gold. And this woman came to my studio and she did a studio visit. And first of all, she was like, the first thing she said to me was, I want to like your gun project, but I don't want to like your gun project. And I was like, okay. I was like, yeah, I mean, the gun debate, you know, it's really complicated. It's a complicated issue. And she was like, no, it's not. It's you either like guns or you don't. And I was like, not really. I was like, okay, you know, this woman doesn't understand or like feel what I'm feeling with this project. That's okay. And then she was looking at the gold flags and she was like, you need to be careful because people will think that you're making a Trump flag. And I thought that comment was really interesting. So I was like, okay, that in itself is so divisive. You know, it's like, you wouldn't want people to think that what half the country is wanting, you wouldn't want people to think that you were that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And isn't that what you titled that piece?
Yeah, so it's called it, People Will Think You're Making a Trump Flag. I'm like, that is a great title.
I laughed out loud when I saw that on your site. And it's a completely gold flag, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So funny. And when you were... Okay, wait, I got to go backwards. So when you got to that residency, were you planning on just still going with guns or were you going there thinking, well, I want to think about other stuff?
I feel like residencies are a good time to try something new.
Yeah.
So I tried a few projects, actually. Some of them kind of failed. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll revisit this idea again. But the flags kind of stuck.
Yeah. And did you always think that you would stuff them like you did with the gun, or did you try quilting them first, or did you just always do the stuff?
I actually did try quilting them first, and then somebody in the residency was like, what if you just stuffed them?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's a good idea.
I love them. And then there's the one that's the topmost on your site that's tied in the knot.
Oh, yeah. I made that right after the election.
Yeah. It's so powerful.
Thank you. Yeah, it's crazy. It's like... Yeah. That was crazy week.
Yeah, it really was. And it's I'm Canadian.
Yeah.
And so I was doing my book tour and I crossed into the U.S. the day after the election to go to Portland and Seattle to do all this stuff. And I was like, well, it's Portland and Seattle. That should be okay. And then our hotel was literally in the middle of the riot in Portland. Oh, wow. There was like helicopters outside of our hotel, like, it was the
weird. You're like, what's happening?
Yeah, and it was so weird being Canadian, right? Because it's like, I didn't get a vote.
Yeah.
And then you're in this thing, and like every event I went to, I mean, I'm there to talk about the book, but of course we all ended up talking about the election because it was so shocking and so fresh and so, you know, and Portland and Seattle are such bubbles that it was, you know, everybody was really blindsided. And anyway, it was weird. And so, and right after that, I saw your knotted flag piece and I was like, pfft. Nailed it. And I was kind of wondering, like, have you, like, on social media and stuff, have you received any backlash from like Trump supporters, gun lovers that
really recently? So okay, well, let me take a step back.
Okay.
First, so it's so like, what was really careful when I started the gun project to not be so strongly one way or the other, you know, but to kind of investigate or like look into this complicated relationship that our country has with guns. So soft sculpture, you know, it's fun. It's kind of funny. It's really approachable. It's like, I'm making these objects that are recognizable. So what I'm hoping that it's doing is like bringing together different people who might have these different views to start talking about issues of gun violence or gun issues and gun laws,
mm-hmm.
and also issues of masculinity and gun culture. That's another thing I can talk about later if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But wait, let me get back. What was I? Oh, backlash. Yeah. So recently, it was a couple months ago, maybe I discovered, somebody brought to my attention actually, that I was on this site called theblaze.com. It is Glenn Beck, the conservative talk radio's news website. So the Huffington Post wrote a piece about the guns, and The Blaze wrote an article that was kind of like picking apart the Huffington Post article about my work. So they were pulling different quotes and saying pretty much, this is so ridiculous. What is this girl doing? And the comments, so I like went down to the comments, there's like 95 comments of just like pretty terrible stuff. Like, I'm a man-hating lesbian who, a snowflake. I just learned what snowflake means. It means like you think that you're really important and special or like unique, but really you're just one of many.
Oh,
yeah. That's and then nice. What were the other ones? It was like, this is what happens when you take too much LSD. This woman has too much time on her hands. This, which I was like, I wish I had too much. what else? Oh, I should put a gun to my head. I should be in an insane asylum. All this crazy stuff. I was like, whoa, this, like, how are like stuffed guns like
causing this? Yeah. Causing this much reaction.
Yeah.
How did you feel? Like, how'd you feel?
At first I was like, oh my God, this is kind of like a little scary or a little, yeah, I guess at first it kind of bugged me for maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And I was like, you know what? This is good. This is okay. Like, at least, I don't know.
It's starting a conversation.
Yeah. I guess it's doing somewhat of what I want it to do.
It's really interesting. Like, you know what you said about trying to take that approach where you weren't taking one side or the other, right? But it is such a polarizing issue. Much like Trump and whatever, it's very polarizing. And it's just funny that the reaction to your work is probably pretty polarizing.
Yeah.
You know, like the people that read my site loved it and totally got what you're doing. And then you get these comments on the other side where,
yeah, they will tell you that you should kill yourself.
Yeah. Oh my word. Were you mad or scared or both?
I think I found it funny after a while. Yeah. And then I would like went out to a few openings in Bushwick and people were like, I saw that. Like people wrote, that was crazy. Like, don't, you know, kind of like words of encouragement.
Yeah.
Like, don't let it get to you.
Yeah. Like, so when you said, oh, I went down to the comment section, I was like, oh no, don't go down there.
I know. And also I realized I like now have a rule. I'm like, okay, just read it once and then don't look at it again.
Yeah. Yeah, because, I mean, the thing is, you're not, well, I mean, it might fuel more work. You know what I mean? Like, it might give you some nuggets.
That's exactly. I'm about to go to Vermont Studio Center on Sunday for a month.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think that those comments I might try to do something with them.
Oh, that is brilliant.
Yeah.
That is really smart. Actually, do you know the site, she shut it down now, Deuce? Did you ever hear about that site?
It
was a mom site, like when blogs sort of first started. I think she probably started in 2005, 2006. And she was just sort of chronicling her life, right? Mm-hmm. Heather Armstrong is her name. I'm sure lots of people listening know who I'm talking about. But she's quite a blunt person, right? And she just kind of doesn't care what people think. And so she used to get terrible comments, like, you know, like you should kill yourself and stuff like that. And that was back in the day when blogs could make a ton of money selling ads. And so this was brilliant. She took all of, I forget what she called it. I mean, I'm sure people at home are going, I know what it was called. I'm blanking though what it was called. But she basically took all the bad comments, put them on one page on her site, and it was the highest visited page on her site. And so she sold ads on that site, on that page, for way more.
Awesome.
Yeah. And she was, and it was like called the Page of Hate or something. And she was just like, well, I might as well get paid for it. So the people that were paying to have ads on her sites would pay way more because they knew that there were more eyes on that page. And I thought, what a brilliant way.
That is pretty great.
To make that work for you, you know? So there you go. You know, make those crazy comments work for you. And do it in Vermont. That sounds delightful.
I know, except for it might be really cold this time of year.
It might be. Is it cold in New York right now?
It just got cold today.
Okay.
Yes, I mean, we had one snow already, but it's starting to feel like, I think it's supposed to snow tonight. It's starting to feel like winter.
Yeah, it's freezing here, and it rarely is. So I'm I don't like it. But you can just tuck yourself away, have some hot chocolate, and read through some really mean comments and see where you go from there.
Yeah, sounds like a good time.
Yeah, totally. So are you still doing video stuff or no?
I am for my job. So I work in television. But I think that once I made it my job, I stopped wanting to do it as my art.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah, but I still enjoy it.
Yeah. Do you do editing?
No, I'm an associate producer on a documentary show.
Oh, that's cool.
So it's fun. Yeah, you get to learn a lot, do a lot, and I think it's a good complement to art making.
Yeah, and that is, I totally know what you mean, because I was a web designer for years and years and years. And so I was in front of the computer a lot, and I really like design, but I missed my hands being dirty.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And so I totally get. And that's a really good combo you've got going now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's working.
And it's cool that you can go off to do a residency for a month.
Yeah, I know. My boss is really, she's into what I'm doing too, and she's very supportive and amazing.
Yeah, well, I think I can't wait to see what comes out of this next residency, because I really do think what you're doing, it's beautiful and it's impactful and it's very smart and so timely. And I just really wanted an excuse to write about you again. So, and I was so glad that I got to get your guns into the show that I did in Toronto at the Alison Milne Gallery.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think like I had literally just written about you days before when the gallery contacted me and said, "Do you want to curate this show?" And I said, "Sure." And they said, "We really loved those guns you wrote about the other day."
Oh, awesome.
And I said, "Me too." And so the show came together really quickly, kind of around you and Bunny Reese from LA. She does those crazy cosmic bunny gloves. And
Oh, yeah. That's so cool.
And so very quickly, it turned into an all-woman lineup. And I was like, I'm not meaning for this to be an all-woman show, but like, these are the artists that I love so much. And all of your work went together so weirdly well.
Nice.
Like, it was all over the place. Like,
I wish I could have gone up there.
I know, me too. I wasn't able to go either, but I'm hopefully going to do something else with them. And hopefully you and I can do something else, because
totally.
I love everything you're doing. Okay, so last question before we do the not-so-speedy speed round.
Okay.
So I was going to say, what's next for you? So obviously the residency.
Yeah.
But other things, and then what would you... In a dream world, what would you want to be next for you?
Ooh.
Or are you good with how you're going?
Yeah. I'm really liking fiber stuff. I mean, I see myself in the future maybe even going back to filmmaking or maybe making some kind of animated thing with the fabric work could be fun.
Oh, yeah.
But right now I'm really digging fiber arts world.
Yeah, don't stop. It's just so, so good. And like I said, I can't wait to see what comes next, because the guns were genius. And then it's like all of a sudden these flags show up and it's like, oh man, that's awesome too. And so, yeah, I think you really hit something. And you know, one of the best feelings, like when you're talking about, you know, sewing and sewing, your sister being like, "Can you talk to me?" that zone is one of the best places to be.
Yeah. I think it's like, I call it therapy. It's like art therapy. Like if I don't go to the studio, I'm like, I need to go.
Yeah.
Like, I need it.
It's like you need that endorphin rush or that, you know, that release or something where you're like, that was awesome. I know. And sometimes I love it too when you all of a sudden you look up and it's 3 a.m. and you're like, oh, did I eat dinner? You know, I love that.
What is today?
Yeah, I love that. So I love that you're in that. So keep it going.
Yeah.
Okay, so, before we do this, you were going to talk about guns and the masculine. Yeah.
So when I was doing the guns for, I guess, a couple months, I was like, okay, something is going on with... I went to New Orleans right kind of when I started. I had maybe 10 or 15 guns. And a friend of mine down there was like, "Show my friends what you're doing." So it was like a party of men in their 30s or mid 30s. And they were like, whoa, cool, and like all of a sudden like started shooting at each other and like, you know, turned into these like little boys with toys. I was like, whoa, nope, like something's up with like dudes and guns. And and then sadly, you know, there was a crazy amount of mass shootings happening in the United States when, like, in the midst of this project, and 99% of them were done by men. And sometimes he's like disgruntled, like, I don't know, I couldn't figure it out. But at the same time, this woman from Vice, she wanted to write a piece about them, and I was like, I think you should write it about something. Something's happening, you know, with like masculinity and gun culture. And while I was like back and forth with her, this other woman wrote an article that was called America's Gun Problem Has Everything to Do with America's Masculinity Problem. And she kind of goes into like how, you know, like gender has changed recently in the past couple years, and how like men feel this need to protect or like feel like they're holding on to their masculinity through this like gun ownership. And of course it's something that you can't really prove, but you can, you don't have to prove stuff when you're art making. So right. Then my gun started getting really droopy and long and more impotent looking.
Yes. I wondered about that.
And that's why the gun lovers really didn't like that.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. I like my, what was another comment was, Ms. Baxter, it's like MZ, Ms. Baxter likes her guns impotent, just like she likes her men. I was like, whoa.
But wait, I thought you were a crazy lesbian.
Oh, so, yeah.
Don't forget that part. Oh my word. Well, yeah. You know what? It's good that you can laugh.
Yeah.
And it is very, well, you know, it's so funny because I have a son, and mm-hmm. we found out when I was pregnant that it was a boy. And the first thing I said, you know, like reading all the baby books and everything, I was like, we are not buying him any guns for toys, you know, like I don't want him to like have that. And my husband is very like, well, he doesn't, well, metrosexual, you know, he's like a very in tune, like very, you know, sensitive, plugged in dude. But he said, he's like, well, we can attempt that. But he said, boys are also really good at like turning a stick into a gun or their finger into a gun or whatever. So he said, we can do our best, but you know, you can't.
Like, yeah.
You know, and anyway, Charlie's not, has never really played like that. So that was, I mean, but that's just how he came out. I don't think it really had much to do with us. Right. I think it's just DNA.
A friend of mine has a little boy, and he's like obsessed with cars. He's like 2 years old. And she was like, I don't get it. I never pushed cars on him. He's just obsessed with cars.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's another thing, like, because these do look, they're stuffed like toys, you know?
Yeah.
I've been really cautious of keeping them in this art context rather than in this, say, like on an Etsy kind of site, sell this as a craft or like a stuffed animal.
Well, I thought it was so interesting when you said those guys grabbed them and started shooting. I mean, like, I wouldn't touch it unless you said it was okay. Like, you know what I mean? It would seem to me like it was art and I should look at it and appreciate it, but not grab it and start playing with it.
Yeah. But a lot of people are like, I want to touch it. Can I touch it? And I'm like, sure. They're, you know, they're very, you want to squeeze them.
Yeah, you do. I mean, I wouldn't, but I'd want to. I kind of want to, you know, jingle those tassels a little bit, but you know, I won't, I promise. I'll stay behind the velvet rope. Oh, that's so, it's all so interesting.
Yeah.
There's cool things ahead. I mean, the cool things are happening now. So have you shown them very much? Like the flags or the guns or both?
Yeah, I have been showing them. Let's see. I just put a little small flag. I just walked it down to the Knockdown Center for the Nasty Woman show. Have you heard about this?
Yes, I just saw. I got an email about it today.
Yeah, it's really awesome. They're like a team of volunteers over there, just going through thousands of artwork submissions. It's really cool.
Wow, when does that go up?
It's in January. I think it coincides with the Women's March on Washington.
Oh, okay. So
I'll
look it up. I'll put it in the post. I'm actually your this episode is going to go up 2 days after the inauguration.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I kind of planned that. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah,
January. Oh, God. Yeah, okay, but I will put information about that show in this post, too.
Yeah. And then some of the flags are going to this museum in South Florida. I'd never heard of it, but they contacted me they're like, we found your stuff on the internet and we want to show a bunch of flags and guns. So they're, some of them are headed to Florida soon. And then there's a show in Denver that just came down. So yeah, just kind of, I think people just find me through the internet.
I was going to say, are people just randomly contacting you then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The internet works in mysterious ways.
It certainly does. Well, it's so cool that not only did you find something that to be obsessed about and super into, is that, you know, you did strike a chord and suddenly you're getting the attention you deserve. You know, like you could have just been in your room surrounded by, you know, 1,000 guns by now. So it's, yeah, it's pretty cool. And I mean, I think that speaks to your awareness of the world and paying attention. I was just talking to somebody, it's so weird because I do the record these and then they don't come out for a couple of weeks. But I was the woman that's going to be right before you, Claire Brewster. She's a paper artist from the UK. And so we were kind of sort of talking about Brexit and, you know, and then everything in the US. And it's just that thing of, I think right now, so many artists feel like they need to say something.
Yeah.
You know, and their art is their way of talking to the world, right? Especially with the internet. Like, you can put stuff out all over the place. And it's a pretty powerful way to, you know, that we couldn't have used years ago, you know? So it's a pretty powerful way to get your message out there and hopefully make a difference and get some conversations happening and make some change.
Yeah. And it's reaching more people than those who would actually go to a gallery.
Yeah. Which I love. Like, that's one thing I love about my site. You know, people always ask if I, you know, about curating in actual galleries versus the site. And I love putting real shows together because, you know, you want to touch it. You want to be up close. That you can't replace that. But at the same time, I can write about somebody and within minute, like, their phone blows up, you know, or like, and they're seen by people in Hong Kong and Australia and every, you know, and that kind of power from the internet is so cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
I love that. But yeah, a combo is good. I like to actually see the stuff. But if I can get somebody a show in Paris, or, you know, like, that's so satisfying.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, not so speedy speed round.
Okay.
Donut or cupcake?
Donut.
Nice. Excellent answer. I'd go with that as well. worst summer job you ever had?
Ooh, I had some pretty good summer jobs.
Okay, good one then.
Let's see. I worked at this art school in Telluride, this like after school program.
What?
Or it's like, you know Telluride, Colorado?
Yeah, yeah.
It's called the AHA School for the Arts.
How old were you when you went and did that?
Maybe 20.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it was great. It's beautiful out there.
Well, that's a really good one. That puts mine to shame.
I'm trying to think of my bad ones. I don't know. I used to work at a noodle place called the Naked Noodle. Where you would, like, choose your type of noodle and then choose your sauce and choose your toppings. So I was, like, the person that put the toppings on the pasta. That was, I think after that I was like, I think my time in restaurant industry is done. Died at the Naked Noodle.
Oh, it could have been so much more if it weren't for the Naked Noodle. Oh boy. Yeah, I had a few restaurant jobs and they never lasted long. It was a good way for me to realize that maybe I should go to university and do other stuff instead of frying chicken.
Mm-hmm. I do think it's good though for people to work in the restaurant industry at least once.
Oh yeah, for sure. You do like customer service and like,
yeah.
And I will never, ever, ever be rude to wait staff ever in my life. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. okay. Favorite. I don't know what you guys call them. We call them stuffed animals, stuffy plush animal. Favorite stuffed toy you ever had as a kid or now?
Well, I'm looking at it right now. It's a little Kermit doll, Kermit the Frog.
How long have you had it?
I think since I was maybe 2 or something. But it has like little Velcro things on his hands and feet.
I remember that.
Yeah.
I love that you still have it. How is he, in good shape or is he?
He's a little ratty, but
loved. He's loved.
Yeah.
Okay, so this might be a very difficult question, but if you had to choose only one, soft gun to your head, you could only work with tassels or gold fabric, which would you choose?
I guess I'd choose tassels.
Interesting. Oh, because you could do gold tassels, get your gold back in there.
Yeah. Or you could use like a shade of yellow that was kind of like gold.
Oh, I see. Sneaky.
Or maybe gold. Maybe in a while I won't want to use gold. So, and then I'll still have tassels.
Okay, good. You thought that one through. That was excellent.
I thought that was going to be a lot harder.
Yeah. No, I thought that would be a tough one. I had my mom on the podcast a few weeks ago. And
I listened to that one. That was so sweet.
Wasn't it cute? I loved it. But yeah, I asked her if she would chocolate or tea, because every day of her life, she says, I'm going to have a nice cup of tea. But then if you put chocolate in front of her, it's like gone in 2 seconds. So she was very upset by that question. How am I supposed, how can I choose? That was so fun. Okay. And then the final question, if you could show your work anywhere, any gallery, any city in the world, where would you want it to be hung?
Ooh. I guess the Whitney, Dreamin' Big.
Yeah. I think that you're going there.
I was at the Whitney the other day and I was like, you know, they're just missing a giant gold flag.
Totally. You know what this space could use?
I mean, that show was great, but.
I think that you are exactly right. You know where else would be nice? Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Right outside, maybe in the Oval Office. Nice droopy one. Anyway, not letting any opinions out. That's it. That's all my questions.
Awesome.
That was so great. I'm so happy that I got to talk to you. Usually on the podcast, I'm always like, we've known each other for years, but we've never talked. But like, I just came across your work, and I'm so happy that I already know you this early on.
Thank you. And I'm glad I discovered you on the internet too.
Oh, the good old internet. Well, hopefully you and I will do things together, and good luck in Vermont. Just so jealous of that. Totally enjoy yourself and report back, because I'd love to hear what you're up to.
Awesome. I will. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Natalie. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Are you still there?
Yeah.
That was so good.
Oh, good. I didn't say or like too much. I can't.
Well, probably as much as me.
It's always my fear.
You did say like once, and I was like, oh, thank God I'm not the only one that says it. No, that was so good. And it'll be interesting to see. I'm very happy with the date that this is going up. And
yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, really do keep me posted. I'd love to hear what comes out of, because I think delving into those comments might just be hilariously perfect.
I know. I think that could be fun.
Yeah. And a good way for you to be like, who cares? Now it's just, you know, fodder.
Yeah.
Like when I started Jealous Curator, the reason I started it was that I was so jealous of everybody, you know, and it was eating me alive. And then instead of like finding stuff and like loving it and being upset, every time now I find something I love, it's like there's tomorrow's post and I'm excited to find it.
Yeah, you know, that's so awesome. That's
it's sort of taking those negative comments and flipping them around and making them work for you, which is brilliant.
Yeah. There's this podcast on, or the show on This American Life. Do you ever listen to that?
Yeah.
There's one on comments that I just listened to that was really good.
Oh, really?
Where it's like this woman calls the guy who writes the negative comment, or like figures out who he is. Or no, he ends up like emailing her and apologizing. And then she interviews him for the podcast. It's really interesting.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that, actually. I haven't heard the episode, but I've heard somebody was – maybe my husband listened to that.
Yeah. And then, someone told me to listen to it after.
Yeah, you should.
After those comments.
Well, you know, and I find that sometimes – I very rarely get negative stuff on my site and, you know, which I love. But if I ever do, my husband used to say, just delete it. And I was like, no, I'm going to use this as an opportunity – to school them and be like, no, not in my house, you know?
Right.
And
keep going. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I did for a while, like when people would comment on my Instagram and be like, what is this? Like, what is this girl doing? Like, or something negative.
Yeah.
I would like take a day and I'd type out an answer, like, this is what I'm doing. And like, this is what, and all, every time I did that, they were like, oh, okay, thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate you getting back to me.
And, I think, like, that happened when I posted about you.
Oh yeah. Was it that?
Yeah, I think so. And cause you responded.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
you go, girl. That was awesome. And yeah, cause I feel very defensive of all you guys because, you know, I put you up on my site. And then if people say something bad there, it's like, I feel like a mama bear, you know, it's like I yeah, put it up there. But very often when I say, you know, no, people will write right back and be like, oh, so sorry, I hadn't had my coffee yet. Or
yeah,
you're right, I see.
I,
yeah. And it's that's why I like leaving them there, you know. And then sometimes if it turns into a battle, it's just like, whatever, like, it's my site, yeah, I can say whatever I want. So feel free to go elsewhere. That's fine with me. But it does bug me. Like, that's why, yeah, I was asking if you felt mad or whatever, because it makes me, like, I get really crabby for a day or two where it's like all I can think about. And then I'm able to laugh and let it go. But your gut reaction is defense, right?
Yeah. Actually, so I ran into Erin Riley, who I think you,
oh, yeah,
I listened to her. Yeah, you interviewed her.
Yeah.
I ran into her this night that I went out and was like, started talking to her about negative comments. And she was telling me that, like, some woman called her and was like to tell her that she didn't like what she was doing.
Called, like, her.
Called Erin to be like, I think that the work you're doing is just so, it was like an old lady who was like an old lady weaver or something, who didn't like what she was doing to the craft of weaving. And it was also like the day after Trump was elected. So she's like,
oh boy.
I was like, that's like the worst day ever. Oh my gosh. But yes, I think like talking about it with other artists or other people who are like, no, like, this is great, you should keep doing this, really helps.
Yeah, it does. Cause if you just let it, if you're just alone with it, it can really, yeah, bother you, and it can stop you, and it can feed your inner critic and all that junk, right? So yeah, I think,
yeah,
when you just tell other people will jump to your defense, and they'll also probably end up laughing about it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And all you can do is just keep making your work, and I think what you're doing is really important, so I'm glad you're doing it.
Thank you. And thank you for getting me into the Toronto show. That's really wonderful.
Oh, no, that I was so happy that you said yes, and I wish I'd seen them in person, but I totally want to do something else with you. So we'll just keep in touch, and if an opportunity presents itself, we'll do something.
Wonderful. That sounds great.
All right. Well, have fun in Vermont, and I will talk to you soon.
Bye.
Okay, bye. How interesting was that? Between last week's episode with Claire Brewster and this talk with Natalie, I'm feeling totally inspired to use my art to say the things I want to say about the current state of our world. And I hope it does the same for you. Thank you so much to Natalie for giving us the story behind her work, and I cannot wait to see what she does with all those nasty comments. Thanks to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode, and of course, as always, thank you for listening. Oh, and if you haven't downloaded the audio version of my new book, and you want to, you can get it for free through my link, audibletrial.com/jealouscurator. You'll also get a 30-day free trial of audible.com that you can cancel at any time. All right, and that's that. You know what's next. There will be more art for your ear next weekend. See you then.